I think we all strive to be top performers and high functioning and being the best employee that we can. But it's an impossibility to be that at all times. And so it's like your 70%, maybe somebody else's 150%. And I certainly relate going through it as well. I'm almost 43 and I'm about to go get all my hormones tested. I'm a mom. I'm running a company. I'm hosting a podcast. There are some days where it's very difficult to show up with that 150%. Hi, and welcome to Prevention Pioneers. Today, we have Beth Finkel. She's a professor. She's a well-being leader of one of the nation's most beloved brands, Wawa. She's a business owner. She's a mom. She's a wife. She's a TEDx speaker. She's killer on paper. But as we know, to be that, to be good on paper, there's a person behind that. There's a person driving those things. So, Beth, I'm super interested in your description of yourself outside of those titles. So who are you? What makes you tick? What attributes do you want to share with the audience?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. This is a question that I really started to ask myself over the last handful of years, just who are you? And for the longest time, I wore what you just shared on paper. I wore that as the person that I was, right? And that is wonderful. And it does serve a purpose. And, you know, we do need to wear our credentials, you know, proudly and loudly. But it can't be our whole identity. And so now I really have gotten into the habit of starting with I'm a mother. Mm-hmm. I'm a mother of four beautiful children. I am a wife. I am a person who feels very deeply. I'm probably one of the most sensitive people you will ever meet. And even lately, I have started to talk about my neurodiversity a little bit more proudly, because even as you read that bio, is so many things, right? And obviously, you don't do all of those things at one time.
Yeah.
But I feel like what a strength that I have with my ADHD is that I do have an abundance of energy. And I feel like I can put it into things, you know, that make me tick and make me motivated. So I like to have my hands in a little bit of everything. And that's just the way my brain works. And I find that to be a strength. And I'm leaning into that quite a bit at this point in my life.
I love that, because what a way to positively frame that and being a high functioning person, because as a high functioning person, also as a highly sensitive person, HSP, they call us the HSP. That's a lot of stimulation to deal with consistently. And, you know, it takes a lot of work to have the tools to properly, at least for me, I historically would compartmentalize, but it's about like, it's actually more about integrating. So one of the things I wanted to dive into is I did listen to your TEDx talk, which is awesome. And so if anyone in the audience, look up Beth Finkel TEDx talk, and I think it's called Feelings in the Workplace.
Yeah.
And I like that, because talk about like a great kind of blueprint of how to integrate who you are and like who you just described yourself as, Beth, into your resume. Because, I mean, we spend so much time at work.
A ton.
So like, how can we be not us at work? So talk about that process for you. Like, when did you start seeing in yourself that this was going to be like a problem if it wasn't something you tackled and kind of figured out how to start integrating?
I love that you use the term blueprint. And I think that's really important, because when you think of a blueprint just in general, it's not the same as having a map somewhere. It's giving you some anchors. A blueprint is giving you some, you know, tests of time, some benchmarks to look at, but it's something that you look at as a guide. And I would say the topic of my TED Talk, Feelings at Work, came at a time that I was experiencing postpartum anxiety with my third baby. And so while I had the blueprint of how to be successful at work and how to live my life at that time, I needed to inject more data into how do I live my life successfully when I'm feeling like I could combust at any moment. Like for those out there who have dealt with postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, which actually postpartum anxiety is not really talked about a lot, because it shows up a little bit differently than postpartum depression. So it gets missed quite a bit, even by our doctors.
Absolutely. So
I try to put a lot of education out around that. But that was something brand new to me and not something that I had with my other children. So it really knocked me off my square at that time. And I felt like I had to mask so many of my positive emotions, and I had to mask, you know, to just show up in a put together way when inside there was not alignment because I did not feel whole. I did not feel seen, and I was struggling to perform and just scraping by with any bit of energy that I had to perform.
Oh my goodness. I bet so many can relate to that. And if it's not directly related to postpartum, it could be related to other significant either changes in their life or other hormonal shifts.
Yeah.
Right. Like, but I do think the hormonal anxiety is very different than anxiety that might come from a significant life change, from other stressors. It's something that truly cannot be controlled in the traditional ways. So I also want to touch on not just the postpartum piece, but even what I hear a lot of from other people in the workforce. Even I've talked to other employers about this, women in their 40s and 50s in the workforce, because our bodies are going through significant changes then as well, and hormonal changes that are often out of our control. So I guess, what do you have any messages for women who might be going through something like that? Is it something that you want to proactively communicate within the workplace? Is it something that, I mean, I've heard of people even taking leaves of absences.
Yeah.
So in your personal experience, like, how did you navigate that? How did you get through that? And then what do you recommend for other women who might be dealing with that?
If I were to go back to 2018, I would have a total different recommendation than what I had available to myself then.
Yeah.
You know, right now I am squarely in the perimenopause, and I talk about this a lot, and not just because I had a bad night's sleep, right? Like, I've actually had a ton of blood work drawn, you know, looking at all my female hormones, you know, getting a plan together with my doctor, and working with a therapist is a number one tip. So I had never gone to therapy before I had postpartum anxiety. And I always say this, but my husband was the first one who pointed it out to me, and which is beautiful and amazing in a lot of ways, just to say, you know, this isn't you. Like, I think you need some help. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have seen that about myself at the time. I think when you talk about menopause and perimenopause for women in the workplace, we feel like it's our fault. And we feel like it's something that we're doing, that we can't keep up with the pace, or, you know, our mood swings are what's the problem.
Yeah.
And it's not our fault. And so that's why I couple the physical well-being aspect of getting your blood work done, making sure you're getting your annual exams and talking to your primary care doctor, but then having an unbiased person to talk to say, like, oh, you know, like, I've never apologized more in my entire life than I have in the last 5 years.
Goodness.
Because
yes.
I would avoid it. You know, I wouldn't have made the mistakes, right? Like, I probably would have, I always said, like, I'm not the type of person that lets the chips fall where they may. I would delicately place them where I wanted them to be, but that's not sustainable, right?
Uh-huh.
In perimenopause, you don't have that option. Like,
oh,
sometimes
gosh,
a facial expression can ruin the mood of a conversation. You know, sometimes you're just not at your best. And so for me, transparency in that space has been really good. One of the things that I found for myself with perimenopause is I started to get migraines quite a bit. And it was this element of ADHD, you know, a lot of, like, overstimulation and then migraines. And of course, leave of absence comes to mind. Like, maybe I should just leave leave my job. Maybe I should just quit. You know what I mean? Maybe I should take a demotion. And I'm sure that's things that come to women's minds quite a bit.
Yeah.
But luckily, I have a very supportive leader. And we're able to kind of talk through some of those symptoms. I know that not everyone has that same luxury, that not everyone is able to feel safe talking about their personal health in that way. I'm fortunate in that way, and I try to be a pioneer in that way and talk to my small circles of women friends, women colleagues to say, like, you know, who is your one safe person? Validate yourself by having the conversation with them, because if you just fully stay in your own head the whole time, you come up with a story that's probably 5% true.
It is so true. That is that's incredible advice, though, is who is your safe person and who can just making sure somebody knows what you're going through in the workplace, because it is hard, especially if you're you know, I think we all strive to be top performers and high functioning and, you know, being our best, being the best employee that we can, you know, but sometimes like it's an impossibility to be that at all times. And so, you know, it's like your 70%, maybe somebody else's 150%, you know,
and just acknowledging
that. Yeah. Acknowledging that for yourself. And I certainly relate, you know, going through it as well. I'm almost 43 and I'm about to go get all my hormones tested. And, you know, I'm a mom, I'm running a company, I'm, you know, hosting a podcast, all, you know, very similar to yourself. And it's like, there are some days where it's very difficult to show up with that 150% that, you know, I normally give, even though I'm in the solution.
Yeah, I love the percentage analogy, and I use it both at home and at work. So I'll start with work. One of my certifications is in restorative practices, and a lot about restorative practices is just observing environments as they are, not with judgment, not trying to fix them, not trying to change anything, just observing where we are in the moment. So one of the things that I do with the teams that I'm on is I will check in at the beginning of a meeting and say, what percentage are you at? And everyone will go around and say like 15%, 40%, you know, James over here will say, I'm about 10%. So I don't need to ask James why he's at 10%. I just need to observe that James is not at his best today. So when I'm working in relationship with James, that's not the day I'm going to nitpick at him because he hasn't gotten something done. That's not the day that I'm going to try to push him, you know, across his boundaries. And it may be insight for me to actually go the extra mile for James that day. So just knowing kind of where everyone is gives you a lot of real data to work in that team environment and build some of that psychological safety at hand.
That is an awesome suggestion. You know, we as Spirits do a 1 to 10 scale. I really like the percentage scale. I think that gives a more accurate, and I've actually heard of that done in marriages.
Yes.
But I've not heard of that done on a team. That's fantastic.
Yeah, because even in marriages, my husband will, you know, will say like, I'm at an 80%. And he's like, I got your 20%, right? Like, and that can be done in a team as well. You know, if James is at a 10%, then collectively at the team, we meet him where he's at and we get him to 100% that day. We get James feeling good and then hopefully restore him back to his feeling good 100% person with time, with care.
Phenomenal suggestion. And in fact, would love to have some content on that with Spirits. So just so the audience knows, Beth is one of our content contributors at Spirits as well. And some of your leadership stuff has been amazing. So, and honestly, I would love to do something on the hormonal factors in the workplace and just feelings in the workplace in general. And back to that topic, I am so interested to hear what you think about, this is something that's come up before in our workplace. And that, and even personally as an employee, what about crying in the workplace? And it's kind of like a funny specific thing, but so my background's behavioral health, and in the behavioral health world, we always say, you know, it's a bodily function, right?
Yeah.
So it's like going to the bathroom. When you have to cry, you have to cry. Now, that's not always appropriate. And, you know, say you're having a structured meeting and for some reason something triggers you, you know, so just with that example alone, like, what are your thoughts on that? Because you don't want to hold it in necessarily, but then it's not always appropriate to let it out.
Well, I always go to the proactive, right? Like, what has led up to that moment that you feel in your body that you're just going to collapse and cry? You know, what has gone on before that? Can we inject any pieces of care, any psychological safety, communication frameworks? You know, can we inject that in the proactive? That would be, as a consultant, the first thing that I would go in and kind of look at and get curious around. In the moment, if somebody is having an emotional reaction, I grew up in a family of nurses and very strong-willed nurses. And I grew up with, you know, a huge social justice type background. And so the very first thing I would think about for that person is that they're validated. Like, they are validated to have that emotion. You can't pick and choose what emotions that you bring to work with you every day. But what I would do as a leader is make sure that everyone has the tools, if they ever find themselves in that moment, to execute upon. So one thing that I coach on in one-on-ones is, you know, if the meeting's not going productive and you're feeling against the wall and you're feeling like you might get aggressive, reactive, you might cry, you reserve the right to say, let's close this and come back to it. I want to take a beat. And I want to come back to it because it's really important to me, but I'm not coming from my most authentic self right now. And it's not all on you, right? It's some on me, but right now it's a little bit confusing. So let's take a beat. And I always coach that women can reserve the right to do that. You know, I have felt myself very rejected in a lot of things. And I have learned that I have a history of abandonment, right? So we need to be talking about some trauma-informed leadership as well.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, ACE scores, and, you know, not everybody's going to walk around and be like, my ACE score is a 7. And even if you said that, no one would know really what that meant. But you do have a responsibility to understand this about yourself. And so for me, if the emotion that I'm feeling is rejection, I use it as data and I try to get clear around it and give it counter data to say, you know, what you're thinking, that negativity bias that you're thinking, or that, you know, neurological drift is not actually real. And just take a beat. Like, breath work is really good.
Right.
You know, actually standing up in a meeting and moving your body to kind of get some of that blood flowing. Should you feel like you're going to have an emotional response, like crying, you know, I personally would walk away. But if, you know, if someone cried in front of me, I would look at them no different. I would validate them in that moment.
Mental health challenges make up 10% of workplace healthcare costs and lead to billions in lost productivity each year. Traditional employee assistance programs were created to help address these challenges. However, they are often underutilized because they are focused on reactive solutions instead of proactive solutions. That's why we created Spirence, to prioritize mental wellness in order to prevent mental illness. Spirence's science-backed platform offers an extensive and continually growing library of mental health courses crafted and delivered by clinical experts. The platform also features live events, interactive coaching, on-demand support tools, and dedicated support for managers. Our approach results in over 800% higher utilization than traditional EAPs. The world is moving towards proactive care, and Spirence is leading the way. Spirence, the future of workplace mental health.
Gosh, what a phenomenal and well-rounded response to that, and some actionable steps for people as well. Because it is true, it usually happens in those moments when things escalate and they're not productive anyway.
Yeah.
But you can also learn a lot from those scenarios, you know, when you kind of look back and diagnose of why it wasn't productive. And to your point, the self-awareness piece is just huge. And that's the legs we stand on at Spearins. How would you say, as a well-being leader, putting that hat on, how do you motivate employees to engage in that? So let's say you have, you know, because we talk to workplaces all the time, and they have tools, a lot of them. They're rolling out these tools, they're rolling out these platforms, you know, the validity of them, how, you know, how much they're helping them, like, leave that out of this conversation. What do you think really motivates? Do you think for most employees, they have to get to the point of crisis, like the pain has to get great enough? Or do you think these newer generations are moving us more into a space of like, they want it, they want to use it, they want to learn about themselves?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
I love that you brought in Gen Z. You know, I'm teaching Gen Z at the moment. I had the pleasure of teaching them at the University of Delaware and now at Westchester University. And they wear their hearts on their sleeves and they will tell you, but they will not tell you unless they feel safe enough to do so. So that's a really big piece of the puzzle, is if you're inviting Gen Zs into your culture, they are going to be rock stars for you. But they don't like to be told what to do. They like to contribute meaningfully. So let me say that again. They don't like, you know, the old age adage of this is how we do things here, right? That is going to land flat every time.
Yeah.
Which is also why they pick up the stereotype that they're hard to work with. They're actually very easy to work with, but you have to include them.
Huh.
And so if they're able to meaningfully contribute, change things up for the better, have really great collective community impact in their organizations, they are going to be pure rock stars for you. But they're not going to keep things hidden most of the time, I have found. They're going to tell you if they don't like something. They're going to tell you if something feels off. They're going to tell you, you know, even the opposite of that, the positive affect, right? They're going to tell you, like, I get so many emails of just, thank you for allowing me to like show my flaws.
Aww.
Thank you for allowing me to practice in conflict, right? Like I would have just ghosted this person, but now I have the tools to have that hard conversation. I had a student this semester say, thank you for reminding me why relationships are important. Like I really have fallen off from nurturing relationships and you have shown me that it's the number one currency we can have. And that is transferable to the workplace. You have to nurture relationships. It can't be black and white. Let's just work on this project. There's a whole human element to getting that project done. And you have to lean into that a little bit.
Oh, goodness. Yes. And I don't know that a lot of leaders, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, especially that middle management layer, really pay proper homage to that, because I mean, think about middle managers.
Oh my gosh.
So much work. So it's like for them to invest the time into those relationships, like sometimes it's like, how is this going to be done? So it's like, there has to be an effectiveness in that skill set in terms of communication, in terms of how they're having the difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that's a real challenge in the workplace today. And literally, we're hearing that all the time from leaders, Beth, like in all industries, that is the layer where they're struggling the most, is because their managers are coming to them and they're saying, we don't know how to manage these people right now. And it is these younger generations, because you have these boomers managing some of these people that are like still the suck it up buttercup.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like you have the suck it up buttercup and then you have what you just described.
That's such a nice way to say that.
Like, you know, so like, the disconnect is, and then even, I don't know, what's the generation after the boomers? I don't know.
Gen X.
Gen X, yeah.
Gen X is closer to boomers in a lot of ways from traits. Like they don't have very great boundaries. So they will negate themselves first, right, before negating their company, and they have trouble sort of raising their hand and sharing what they need, and mental health just in that generation is still really big stigma, because at that generation it wasn't really talked about and it wasn't something that was in our everyday lexicon, and I would say millennials and Gen Z have a lot of attributes that align,
Yeah.
And enter COVID, right? Enter the fast-paced, flexible hybrid work. You know, COVID in a lot of ways pushed the boundaries on that and expedited it 7 to 10 years of where we would have probably been without COVID. So I think that the suck it up buttercup, there's a lot of grief for them because, and just showing some compassion and empathy for that generation, they didn't have that, what Gen Z is asking for. So it feels a little unfair, you know, when they see someone closing their laptop at 3 o'clock because they want to get their kids off the bus. That's not something that they had the luxury to do.
You are nailing it. Yes.
So I think about that a lot, and you're going to have people that you do get close with in that generation, and they'll tell you, like, I'm really happy that it's different now. I'm really happy that it's different for you. But there is some grief, which can maybe turn out into that, like, this is how we do it here. That's how that translates.
I love this conversation because it's I don't know that it's one that's really being had a lot, but it, you know, we're talking to employers every day at Spirence, and it's like, you know, when you really stop and think about the differences of these generations and the unique needs of each one, you know, I mean, how overwhelming for employers. And it's also like, as an employer, where does your responsibility start and stop in terms of caring for your employees, which is another thing that I wanted to touch on with you in the time that we do have left, is organizational effectiveness. Because, you know, our whole conversation has been about being able to bring all of ourselves to every aspect of our life.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I will say, even as a mother, I try to integrate pieces of my profession into my kids. Like my daughter helped us choose the icon for Spirence, you know, and helped us choose the name. And, you know, she's asking questions about building a company, and, you know, and I need that as a mom. You know, I need to know that some of the things that I do with a lot of my time every week are going to positively influence my children.
Yeah, I love
that. You
know
what I mean? So much of our conversation has been about that. All that being said, in terms of organizational effectiveness, how important is what we're talking about to that? People being able to be themselves, psychological safety, all of it.
Psychological safety is probably the number one driver of organizational effectiveness.
Wow.
And I believe that it's paramount to the conversation. Where I'll say we get stuck is that we are not leaning into technology, things like AI and generative learning as we should. We're not asking hard questions. For example, you know, someone was hired to do a certain job and the job has maturated to a degree that person no longer is meeting the moment. So what skills do they need? Like we kind of take learning and development as a broad stroke a lot of times versus making it very personal.
Yeah.
And actually matching the skill gap to the learning plan. So we need to actually do that. We need to figure out where the skills are, where they need to be. And then we look at the gap between that place, and that's where you get that person's learning plan. And then I think we need to start working earlier, right? Like you talked about the suck it up buttercup culture. Well, we still have some of that in millennials, and we'll see some of that in Gen Z too, because that's how they are trained and that's how they learn. But if we can get some of this into the pipeline, like higher education, or even, you know, I developed a mental health leadership course for 5th grade girls.
Oh,
And that to me, and actually it was when I was learning to use ChatGPT. I said, let me use ChatGPT and figure out a design of this program. And so even like I would even advocate to get some of this into early education to start building that confidence for girls so they don't get to 40 years old and they're sitting at their desk at 5 o'clock, but no one's leaving. And they're afraid to say, I need to go to get to my kid's soccer practice because no one else here is getting up. Right. Like we need to do it earlier. In one of the capstones in one of my classes, it was leading an effective meeting. which I laugh about because it is silly, but no one knows how to do it. And if you can lead a great meeting, you can lead a great team. The team can lead a great business imperative. So we need to start with the root there.
Oh my gosh, I love it. You give such actionable things that don't take a lot for people to shift, but then it causes a big shift. It creates a big shift. And I love that you touched on the communication piece, because that's something we really emphasize here too, is communication. And there is an art to it.
Yes.
And if you learn the art, it takes so much stress out of that day, because you have the confidence, you know how to phrase things. Even one of our coaches here, oh my gosh, I've learned so much from him. But one of the things was even how to phrase a difficult conversation into feelings, understandings, and needs. How many people in the workplace take a beat, like you said, take a beat? I love that way to put that, to think about their needs.
Yeah. I mean, I would even push it even further. And I do a just like me activity. Like if I'm going into a hard conversation, let's say I'm going into a hard conversation with you, Laura, I would do like a 3 to 10 second, like Laura is a mother just like me. Laura has love for people just like me. And I would go through this just to dissipate any of that negative affect. And I'm already coming to that conversation a little bit more willing to negotiate and solve together.
Oh my gosh, Beth, I have to tell you, you're awesome. Awesome. And just so the audience knows, this is our first time meeting. Beth and I have never spoken before. She's done some content for us here. And, you know, I told her I spent the last, you know, few hours immersed in the world of Beth, listening to her TED Talk, listening to her podcast, which is called
Trust Me.
Trust Me, which I think,
and it's a play on words because it's trust me, like trust yourself. You have everything that you need. So trust yourself that you're going to get it right, even if it's not done the first time. We don't always get things done the right the first time, but we do the best that we can with the data that we have.
I love that, because I actually listened to the last episode that you guys just posted yesterday, and it was on making difficult decisions. And what I took from that is, you know, and I always try to embrace this because I've personally done a lot of work around this, but it's not always about, you know, it's about the process. It's not always like a quick fix, like decisions made. Like sometimes a decision is a process, and there are going to be multiple steps of that. There will be multiple decisions made, you know, everybody
emotions involved.
Exactly. Like it's not always going to be that quick. Like, okay, everybody's like, this is the path we're taking. Let's go. You could take that path and there's another decision to be made. And there's another decision to be made before you get to that end game. So it's just like, trust
yourself. No decision is still a decision too. And that could be good or bad. Like if you make no decision and you wait on something that starts to pick up some negative things along the way, you're still making a decision by not making a decision.
Oh gosh, I love that. I can't tell you, and I'm sure you're the same as a leader, how many situations I've observed like that, where it's just like, and I just had a friend say that's me a couple of weeks ago. They're like, let's not make a decision right now. You know, you're like, you're about to go get your hormones tested. You're, you know, you just went through, I just was diagnosed with pelvic floor dysfunction, hypertonic.
Yep,
I don't know if you know what that is, but
I do know.
Goodness. But I mean, that alone tells you, you know, the body keeps the score.
I'm doing Kegels as we talk. You're reminding me.
That is awesome. I'm jealous. I'm not allowed to do them anymore. I'm not allowed. I did too many, apparently, but it's because your body is going to tell you.
Yeah.
Even where your mind, you know, it's like the whole mind over matter sometimes too. Like you can't do that sometimes. Your body's going to say, here's an alarm. You may be cool, calm, and collected on the surface, but inside you are just bracing for life.
Yeah.
So what changes do you need to make, or shifts do you need to make, or tools do you need to adopt to where you're not consistently bracing for life?
And have a conversation about it. You know, with us in the workplace, you know, a lot of times we already think the worst case scenario is going to happen. you know, but I have found that when I've been able to have a productive conversation over a need that I have, the other person has been a really good human around it. And they may not be able to figure it out for me, but they can connect me, right? Like they may coach me up and connect me to the places that I need or offer advice, right? Sometimes it's easy to say, like, can you give me some advice? Like, who doesn't like to be asked advice? It means that you value that person. It means that you're going to take what they say into serious consideration. So that might be a little bit of a switch too. Instead of saying like, I need this, and if I don't get this, X will happen. Say, can you give me a little bit of advice? I'm struggling right now. That shows some vulnerability.
It does. And that's a great example that you just said. That is how I think some people approach those conversations, especially when it comes to a need that they have in the workplace and they're going to their direct supervisor. It's that defensive approach that you just described. Whereas if you develop those communication skills, like a very small shift in that can disarm the entire conversation and make it
right,
make it more productive. Honestly, if we had a magic wand experience, that's one of the things we would hope people would embrace the most in the platform would be that type of learning and that type of content, because they can just change the game.
Yes, no? I'm with you.
So with that, I have really enjoyed getting to know you. You're so easy to talk to. You have so much to offer, both on the personal side and the business side, and you integrate them beautifully. So
thank you. It's been my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for being a guest. We definitely hope to have you back doing more content for us at Spherence, because you're awesome. And I hope you have a wonderful day. And thank you all for tuning in today. We will be back soon with another show and more amazing guests. And another big thank you to Beth Finkel.
Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.